We're still in the 31st chapter of Ezekiel. In this portion of the prophecy, he is comparing the king of Egypt to the king of Assyria. He has already shown how the king of Assyria had great power. He'd risen to great heights. He was a very strong, invincible king, but he, because of his wickedness, was made to fall. And so he's comparing this prosperity and this attitude of having a haughty spirit that the king of Assyria had to the king of Egypt, and showing what's going to happen to the king of Egypt. So right now he's in the very midst of showing the fall of the king of Assyria. We're in the 12th verse of this 31st chapter. He's already said in the 11th verse, "I have therefore delivered him into the hand of the mighty one of the heathen. He shall surely deal with him. I've driven him out for his wickedness." So it's going to be the heathen, the mighty one of the heathen that does this. It's God who is bringing this about by using this mighty one of the heathen as his instrument. And it is due to the wickedness of the king of Assyria. Now, let's briefly look at the history again. It was the king of the Medes, whose name was Cyaxares, who combined with the king of the Babylonians, who was Nebuchadnezzar, in the year 607, and they then brought about the downfall of the king of Assyria, who at that time was Cyaxares. So in verse 12 he says, "And strangers, the terrible of the nations, have cut him off and have left him." Now when he talks about the strangers, these would be not people from his own nation. People coming from outside the nation, other nations, would rise up against him. And of course, as we've mentioned, it was the Medes and it was the Babylonians. The terrible of the nations. At this time, Nebuchadnezzar was only in the first year of his reign. He could hardly be said to be the terrible of the nations at this time, but he eventually did become the terrible of the nations. He was the most feared of all the powers and all the kings on the face of the earth. A very short time after this. And then he says, "have cut him off and have left him." Now, anytime you take a mighty tree and you cut it off, then it ceases to have its majesty and its glory. It ceases to live. It then begins the process of decay. It falls. So he was cut off and he was left. "Upon the mountains and in all the valleys, his branches are fallen, and his boughs are broken by all the rivers of the land." So in the places where he previously reigned as supreme, where he was almighty, all-powerful, he now has fallen. Just as his branches reached out over a large area, when they fall, then the remaining pieces cover a large area. So they're broken by all the rivers of the land, and they're up on the mountains and in all the valleys. "And all the people of the earth are gone down from his shadow and have left him." So now instead of people congregating around him and telling him how great he is and looking for whatever blessings and possessions they might gain from him, they've left him. Now that he's fallen, he is deserted. He no longer has this great following. He no longer has this great court of people who are giving him the great compliments. He no longer has even a captive audience any longer. They've left him. Verse 13, "And upon his ruin shall all the fowls of the heaven remain, and all the beasts of the field shall be upon his branches." Now this shows a certain sense of degradement here. Whereas before he was so mighty that the fowls came and built their nest in his branches and looked to him for comfort, and all the beasts of the field stayed under his shade and had their little ones there. Now they are on his branches, and they remain. That is, they haven't left. They're still carrying on their activities as usual, even though he seemed to be so invincible and so necessary. They're continuing without him. Verse 14, "To the end that none of all the trees by the waters exalt themselves for their height, neither shoot up their top among the thick boughs, neither their trees stand up in their height, all that drink water. Now, what he's saying here in this 14th verse is that the other trees are definitely influenced by the fall of this great tree. They no longer have any hope of aspiring to great heights. They realize that what happened to the great tree can also happen to them. It's just as if you have a forest that men are moving in to clear out the timber from, when one tree falls, another feels like that it also can fall. Or if there's a forest fire, the same thing would happen. Well, when the leader of a great nation and that nation falls, then those nations round about it that are subservient to it, that are tributaries of it, they also then take fear because they're in for a very similar treatment. So none of the trees by the water exalt themselves for their height. That is, they do not take pride in the fact that they now are higher than this fallen tree, for they know that the calamities of the land are going to be their calamities also. So he says, all that drink water, for they are all delivered unto death, to the nether parts of the earth, in the midst of the children of men, with them that go down to the pit. Now, death is the great leveler. And so when all are delivered unto death, then this puts you on common ground with all mankind. For all mankind must go through this stage of death. And he says that they go to the nether parts of the earth. That is, this is the lowest or the inner parts of the earth. And it would be a symbolic expression of the abode of the dead. So they're going to the nether parts of the earth in the midst of the children of men. Now you want to be so high and so mighty and rise above all the other men so that you think that you're not like them, you're so different from them. When death comes, you're in the midst of the children of men. This is the place where all mankind must go. They must all go into death. And it's appointed unto man once to die. And we will keep that appointment. As we think of the population of the living, there are millions and millions here upon this earth that are alive, yet this doesn't compare with the population of the dead. There are many, many, many more dead men than there are alive men. And so when we die, we simply join that great company, that great innumerable multitude that's known here as being in the midst of the children of men, with them that go down to the pit. So temporal possessions, earthly pleasures, earthly wealth and power really mean nothing when it comes time to die. When we die, we join the true state eventually that all mankind is going to go to, the state of the dead. And so that's one of the reasons that Jesus says in his Sermon on the Mount, to lay not up for yourself treasures on the earth where moth and rust doth corrupt and where thieves break through and steal, but he says rather lay up for yourself treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. And what he's simply talking about here is to have these spiritual treasures, the spiritual values, to spend time cultivating those things that have to do with us and God, and not just spend all of our time with the temporal things. And so it is true of this great king of Assyria. Regardless of how great he was, whenever it came time for him to die, whenever he went to the nether parts of the earth, there in the midst of the children of men, he was with them that go down to the pit. Like it or not, that is an appointment he had to keep. And so it's not the power that we have in this earth that counts. It's not the great majesty and the wealth that we accumulate here. It's what we have done with God. It's how well we have laid up for ourselves treasures in heaven. It's where our heart is. That's what counts. And when our heart is in heaven, we will have laid up treasure there in heaven also. So, verse 15, thus saith the Lord God, in the day when he went down to the grave, I caused a mourning. Now this falling of the king of Assyria wasn't a light thing. It was noted in major parts of the earth. There was a great mourning went up because an institution had fallen. Nations aligned themselves in such a way so that they partake of the benefits they are protected by. They are used as vassals by the great nations, and they work out a way in which they have some security here. Well, when the great nation then falls, then this causes a realignment of all of the securities and all of the dependencies of these other nations. So he says, thus saith the Lord God, in the day when he went down to the grave, I caused a mourning. I covered the deep for him, and I restrained the floods thereof, and the great waters were stayed. Now, of course, this is figurative language, but to have covered the deep means that he cut off the waters coming from the ocean, from the seas. And, of course, as we know, all of our rain comes from those oceans in the form of clouds. And when we have a cessation of the rains, then we also stop the flow of the rivers. So I covered the deep for him, and I restrained the floods thereof, and the great waters were stayed. And I think he's simply saying here that he greatly reduced commerce. He reduced productivity. He reduced the economic advantage that the nations had who were depending upon this great king of Assyria. So there was a kind of a chain reaction. When the Assyria fell, then other nations also suffered for it in an economic way. And of course, anytime somebody suffers economically, they're going to mourn for it. So there was a great mourning here. He says, and I caused Lebanon to mourn for him, and all the trees of the field fainted for him. So the nations surrounding Assyria that had built some kind of a security, some kind of an alliance, some kind of a working agreement with this mighty nation of Assyria, they all mourned for him, and the trees of the field fainted for him. Instead of growing stronger and independent, they fainted. That is, they lost heart. They were weakened. Verse 16, I made the nations to shake at the sound of his fall, when I cast him down to hell with them that descend into the pit. So this was a thing felt among all the other nations. They recognized this. They trembled. They shook. And it's true today. When some great event happens nationwide, it's broadcast on the news. Everybody gets alarmed and excited about it. And the nations are made to shake. And so the very same thing happened when this king of Assyria fell. So the more dependent the other nations were upon him, the more power he was able to exalt, rather than this to protect him and give him security and give him a longer reign, it simply just made them shake too when he fell. So I made the nation to shake at the sound of his fall, when I cast him down to hell with them that descend into the pit. This happened whenever he had to die like other men. And all the trees of Eden, the choice and the best of Lebanon, all that drink water, shall be comforted in the nether parts of the earth. So they realize then, the other trees do, that this is going to be the ultimate thing that's going to happen to them. They're also going to fall. They're also going to have to go down into the pit. They're also going to have to enter this common dwelling of man after this life, a state of being in what we now refer to as death. And we're talking about physical death, not necessarily spiritual death. And so they should be comforted in the other parts of the earth. They're going to have to learn to be comforted in that state. They're going to have to learn to get along in the state of the dead. And now this is a very difficult task for most people. Most people don't even want to think about dying. They don't even want to think about what's going to happen when they die. They don't want to make any kind of preparation for death. But all the comforts that you receive in this life are only temporary. They're only transient comforts. They're not going to last very long. The true preparation, the true security is going to be to make preparation for death. And when you can be prepared so that you're going to be comforted in the nether parts of the earth, then you're truly prepared to meet God. You're truly prepared for the judgment day. Well, all people are going to have to somehow or other realize that their ultimate comfort, whatever that's going to be, even though it's a state of torment, their ultimate comfort's going to be in the nether parts of the earth. It's going to be in the lower parts of the earth, that is, in the state of the dead. So make preparation for that. And regardless of how high they rode here in this life, they see the handwriting on the wall, they're going to have to be comforted in the lower parts of the earth, whatever comfort that may be for them. And for some, of course, it's not comfort at all. It's a state of torment. Verse 17, they also went down into hell with him, unto them that be slain with the sword. So they fell too. They also went down into hell with him. No nation, no king has survived forever. All have fallen. And so we as humans realize that we too today are going to be in a state of going down to the nether parts of the earth. We're going to have to cross over the chilly waters of death, the figurative Jordan River, and then if we've done the right thing, we'll be allowed to go into the rewards and place of heaven that God has prepared for us. So they also went down into hell with him under them that be slain with a sword, and they were his arm that dwelt under his shadow in the midst of the heathen. So those that were the very support and the very right hand of this great king had the very same thing happen to them. So beginning in verse 18, he compares this now. He relates this to the king of Egypt. He shows how that all these things he said pertain to the great Pharaoh. So he says, to whom art thou thus like in glory and in greatness among the trees of Eden? Now just which one of these great trees are you like, Pharaoh? Pick the greatest one. Pick the most secure one. Pick the one that had the greatest ability and the most power and the most influence. Which one do you want to be like? They've all fallen. All have gone down. Which one do you compare to? Which one lasted? Yet shalt thou be brought down with the trees of Eden under the nether parts of the earth. You're going to be brought down too. You're also going to have to face this time of death, this time of going to the lower parts of the earth, just as the trees that live there in Eden, that glorious garden, have had to go down, even so also you too will have to go down. And you're going to be brought down with the trees of Eden. And of course, the king of Egypt, if he had any kind of foresight at all, if he had any kind of reasoning ability, he could see that this very same thing was going to happen to him. No other king had lasted forever, no other kingdom, and of course, neither would his, not in the same glory and strength and power that he was enjoying at this time. And we today can apply these very same lessons to us. Let us not think of one kingdom, one ruler, as being the ultimate of all things, that there's nothing can ever happen to him, for all the great rulers that have ever risen up have all had a fall. And we then as individuals are all going to have to go into this place of death, and what's happened to those before us is also going to happen to us. If they've lived a wicked life and die in that wicked state, whatever happened to them as a result of that will happen to us if we too live a wicked life and die in the wicked state. If they've been righteous and faithful and die in that state, then whatever they had happened to them as a result of their righteousness, we can expect it to us today. He's talking about precedence. What's happened before is going to happen again. What happened to Assyria is going to happen to Egypt. What happened to the king of Assyria is going to happen to the king of Egypt. So, he says, thou shalt lie in the midst of the uncircumcised with them that be slain by the sword. The uncircumcised, of course, are the heathen, the idolaters, at this time the Gentiles, those that do not know God. You're going to be brought down by those that are like you. God uses ungodly men to bring about punishments and chastisements of other ungodly men. This is not the job of the church. It's not the job of his people. Not this battle. He'd already used his people in all of the worldly conflicts and temporal warfare that he wanted them to engage in back when they were going into Canaan and possessing that. Now we're at a different age, a different time, and this is not a battle directed for his people. It's going to be the uncircumcised. You're ungodly, you're going to die at the hands of the ungodly and suffer the same consequences that the ungodly suffer. This is Pharaoh and all his multitudes, saith the Lord God. He names him, he points it out, he shows exactly who this is talking about. It is Pharaoh now that's going to have this happen. The great precedent has been set. And so Pharaoh, when your time comes for judgment, your time comes for trial and punishment, you're going to be made to follow the precedent of what happened to the king of Assyria. You and all your multitude, you and your nation are going to fare the same way, saith the Lord God. God is saying this. This is a prophecy. And of course, this prophecy was brought about and fulfilled to the very letter, which shows us then the greatness, the truthfulness of the Bible itself. The immediate lesson here is a lesson to Pharaoh, showing that he's going to be judged and made to fall like the king of Assyria. But the secondary lesson, which is just as great to us, is that when we see the precedents that have gone on before us, we see how God has dealt with man in the past. Let us know that he's not a partial God. He's going to deal with us in the same manner. If our lives need to be straightened up, if we need some changes to be made, if we need to get right with God, now's the time to do it, or we're going to have to suffer the same consequences of all those in the past who have not gotten right with God. That brings us to the end of chapter 31. We're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is NC Crouch saying, goodbye, friend.